Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. If you're new here anyway, welcome. Hope you like what you hear and stick around. You might enjoy it if you hit subscribe. You know, just hit that button now and hopefully see you again in the future. But if you're a regular visitor, welcome back. You'll recognise me. I'm with Miles today. Good to see you, mate. How are you? How was your weekend? What are your highlights? Dare I even ask?
I was going to say, I think I'm better than you and I've had a better weekend than you, definitely.
I'm remarkably chipper, aren't I, considering the United Derby result, to be fair.
My highlight speaks for itself, really, and I'm sure we'll come to it later and I'll have a chat about that. But nice to see Villa getting a very decisive win for a change.
Absolutely. And speaking of decisive wins, we'll have to start in the Manchester Derby at the Etihad. It was a 4-1 drubbing. It was an absolutely shocking performance from United. But one I think nobody could have really not seen coming. It was one of those kind of true to form games, wasn't it, for both teams? Mm. United played all right in the first half, but the second half was just awful. And I think Roy Keane really laid into some of the players, didn't he, on Sky? And I'm kind of glad we haven't got our own Roy Keane here today in Dave, because he probably would have had a similar kind of thing to say. But
I thought it was Paul Scholes.
Impartially, Miles, what did you take away from the Manchester Derby?
So there's a debate of where to start here with how brilliant Man City were or how poor United were. I think we'll start with City. I thought they looked absolutely fantastic. They clearly had a plan going into the game that they were going to target the right-hand side of United's defence, which, let's be honest, is quite easy to exploit at the moment. Wan-Bissaka's been in pretty poor form this season. And with the kind of attacking talent Man City have got on that left-hand side, it was just really easy to overload them. So obviously they put Grealish out on the left, but then had Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden and Cancelo all supporting in that area. And United just had no clue how to deal with that. But even if they did have more of a setup, the way City play around teams, they were at their absolute best. And when you look at the quality of someone like Phil Foden, who, honestly, I remember when he first started to break through, the talk around Phil Foden, I've never heard about an English player of his sort of age. The talk was, this kid is something special and he's going to be a generational talent. And you're starting to really see that in him. Mm. It was such a commanding performance, even in the derby. One of the biggest games of the season, wherever Man United are in the league, he was just outstanding. The skill that he clearly possesses was on show for all to see. The second goal, the way he creates that, it's unfortunate for him that he didn't score, to be honest. He really deserved it for that move over Lindelof. But along with that, when you've got players like De Bruyne at the top of their game, he's really come into form since coming back from injury as well. And I think Guardiola's comments after the game were really interesting, because you know what he's like.
Yeah.
When they've lost, he tends to talk about how brilliant the game was. And when they win, he finds something to pick at. But all he could say was, that was absolutely perfect. That was so nice to watch. And he was really complimentary of De Bruyne. And you can see why. He had the armband for the day and he clearly led by example as well. I've said it a thousand times, but De Bruyne is the best counter-attacking footballer in the Premier League. Not because he's got lightning pace and can break teams, but he always finds the right pass that just completely splits a team apart. I just thought he was outstanding.
Yeah, I think with the City setup as well, you could pick any one of that front line and say they actually put in a shift as well. Their work rate was unreal. And I think that was a big difference in a derby, especially. But like you say, Foden just enabled the likes of De Bruyne to do what he does best. And there were so many occasions where the ball was pinging in between our lines. Well, I say lines, we didn't really have any lines. And that was the thing. There was no structure there whatsoever. But they were knocking it about like a practice match for most of the second half, especially.
Yeah.
And it was truly humbling and embarrassing to watch. But I mean, the set piece for, was it City's third goal from the corner, direct to Mahrez, and then on the half volley, Roy Keane said it himself, screaming at the telly, who's picking him up? Who's chasing him down? Yeah. And they planned all these things so meticulously. And the difference between the two teams has never been more glaringly obvious than that particular game. It was both teams where they are now in a nutshell. And really highlights the job that Rangnick or whoever's taking over from him has to do in the next however many years it will take to get back to that kind of level, because at the minute, United are so off the pace, aren't they?
It was a mess. And the thing is, it's almost like you said, we saw it coming a mile off. Even though United have managed to get results against City of late when Solskjaer was in charge, you knew it was obvious what was going to happen in this game. And I think that's down to a few things. The harmony within the squad looks awful. They still don't really seem to know what's going on. After this game, Ranić came out and started talking about how Cavani had been training for the last 3 days and looked fine, but then said on Saturday he wasn't match ready. He said that he can't pick Ronaldo because his team doctors told him he's injured. His comments around Ronaldo, I thought, were really weird. A bit awkward, to be honest. He's unfortunate that Varane's picked up COVID, obviously. But short of three or four players, not only would not many of these Man United players make it into Man City's team, they wouldn't make it into their squad. The quality of the squad is just so poor from Man United right now. And it leads to a lot of questions about some of the individuals that they've got there and some that they've brought in as well. Obviously, Man United being one of the biggest clubs in the country are talked about for every performance they have. And I think before this game, they hadn't lost in 8 games. So it's not the end of the world to lose to a very good Man City side. But what it does expose is if you're trying to be back at the top table, you really see the gaps here, and particularly in defence. Mm. Their defence in midfield is so poor, but I don't really expect much else, because if we break it down, they've got Wan-Bissaka at right back, who had a great season at Crystal Palace. He had one season before Man United spent big money on him. And of course, he's a young player with a lot of potential, but he's never had to do it at the top level. And he's had times for United where I've thought he looks outstanding. And I've said to you that I think he should be in the England setup. But this decline is... it's not a surprise, because he's clearly not being coached in his position very well. The United defensive coach is not dealing with Wan-Bissaka's progress properly. Then you've got someone like Maguire, I love Maguire for all that he does for England, and again, has had a couple of games for United where he looks fantastic. But if you actually look at where Harry Maguire has come from in his career, he played a handful of games. He played a couple of seasons at Hull, a couple of seasons at Leicester, and really where he built his reputation was with England. I hate to say this because I love following England. If you look at what Maguire has done for England, a lot of it has been against very weak teams. Maguire has rarely had standout games against major opponents. You could argue in the Euros that obviously he played well against Germany and to an extent Italy. But short of that, England's qualification is always very easy. The World Cup where England went so far, they didn't really play anyone difficult other than Belgium, and he didn't play that game. So we've never actually seen Harry Maguire play at a top level, and he's 29 now, I think.
Yeah.
So he's, maybe he's just not that good, and that's okay.
He's good, though, but he's good when he's with somebody exceptional. And I think that's why he can't be captain, because for England, that burden's not on him. And he plays alongside John Stones, and they actually organise each other pretty well. It works out okay. And with United, when he's with Varane, they look a decent partnership. But he's got the armband. It's almost like it should be Varane's armband instead, because he's the one who's reading the play. He's the one who's marshalling the defence. And Maguire looks more comfortable against the player, alongside a player rather, like him. Give him the armband, give him a not as good a defender like Lindelof, and suddenly it's absolute chaos. He is not leadership material. But then who in that United team is at the moment, you know?
Bruno Fernandes is the obvious choice for captain, really, in that side. And he didn't have a good game particularly either, to be honest. But he's a much better captain than Maguire would be in this moment. And the thing is, with Maguire as well, like, you say he's good and he looks good when he's alongside Varane, but that almost worries me, that is his ability actually there? Because even with England, when he looks good, it's such a different setup to what United play.
Yeah.
Quite often it's a back five, and you've got Stones, but you've also got someone like Mings there, or you've got Carl Walker or someone a bit quicker to cover behind him. You're also shielded by a much better holding midfielder in Declan Rice or even Jordan Henderson at times. There's someone there to protect him, but he looks really out of his depth at the moment. He needs a run where he's not in the team, just to collect his head a little bit as well. He needs to be dropped for his own sake as well, just to alleviate some of the pressure on him, I think, because the other problem is he is becoming United's problem. He is the name that gets mentioned under everything. It's either Ronaldo's flopped, which I don't really think you can say, or Maguire isn't a good enough captain. So he needs any good manager looks at that and goes, let me take some of the pressure off you for a little while. And I'm not taking a captaincy off you, but I'm going to rest you for a couple of games, let you regain some time. It's just, but Ranić doesn't seem like he's there for that. I don't really know what his plan is anymore, Ranić, to be honest, because the way he talks, he's alienating a lot of the squad. He doesn't really seem to be particularly winning the fans over. The style that he plays is actually quite nice in some games. Yeah. And some of the football I've seen him play lately is so much better. But this game showed so many flaws. And the most obvious one, and I wonder what you think of it, but the thing that I noticed was the way in which the two sides pressed.
Yeah.
That stunned me. Man United, what they've said about Ranić is he is a pressing manager. He plays with this high press. The reason City had so much more success in this game was because United was slow on the ball at the back. Lindelof would hold the ball for 3-4 seconds and wait for invite pressure onto him. Now, when Man City press, it's not, right, Grealish, you run to the man on the ball and press him, and he'll pass it to Maguire, and then someone run to Maguire. It's, they move as a unit. They don't just press the man, they press the passing options. United don't do that. And that's the most obvious thing with pressing. You can't press on your own. But too many times I watched in this game, Bruno Fernandes chased down one of the Man City defenders. And then they just pass it square and pass it around them because they're a brilliant passing team. But if you have the whole line step up together, you've got to be aware of what your midfield's doing.
Yeah.
Because if the forward line presses and that midfield sits deep, all you're allowing is the defence to pass their way through that pressing line into the midfield, and then the counter's on and De Bruyne has beat you. And it was just so obvious. And Ranić, that's meant to be his special move.
Well, he's not got the players to execute that at all. And he hasn't had the time with them to execute that. And I think that's sad in some ways, because these players need the time to be coached. They really do. And like you said, players like Wan-Bissaka have regressed a lot in a couple of seasons being there. He should be at his peak now, and he's not. Maguire, the same. He should be at the peak of his powers. Definitely. None of them have had the coaching they deserve or need. It's not their fault. I'm sure there are issues in the dressing room with attitude as well from certain players. I have no idea who, but clearly something's not right. But the differences between United and City and their attempted press United was just football intelligence, first of all.
Massively.
Knowing when to press, knowing how to press, doing it together. Second of all, it was work rate, sustaining it for long enough. After the second half, there's a reason they fizzled out, just because they couldn't sustain that press for any longer. As well as City obviously throttling possession completely. I've never seen those kind of possession numbers against United for a long, long time. It was shameful in some ways. But if you can't have that football intelligence coached into you, if you can't have that kind of pressing system, like you say, as a unit made part of the culture there, you can't just do it on the fly. And that's Ranić's problem. He can't make that happen just overnight.
But what's weird about it is, you say he doesn't have the players there for it. I would argue that United are quite well set up for that in the team that they played yesterday in particular. Because if you think about it, you've got the likes of Jadon Sancho, who's got pace and energy. Yeah. You've got Bruno Fernandes, who does work hard and can do that job. Your midfield, McTominay and Fred, their main attributes are they put themselves around. They've got energy. And under Solskjaer, they weren't necessarily a pressing team, but they were a counter-attacking team. So you know they've got the energy to do it. They just, like you say, they just clearly don't have the brain for it. And then Man City, on the other hand, they are all brain. That partly comes from their coach. Absolutely. But then when you look at who's leading their midfield and their defence in some ways as well, I think they're really intelligent defenders too. It wasn't even a contest. But it just boils down to that starting 11 for Man United yesterday. You've obviously got Jadon Sancho and Bruno Fernandes, Paul Pogba when he's on form. Short of that, a lot of them aren't they even European football quality? I don't think they are.
With the right quality of players to make the system work, you could easily paper over the cracks a bit easier. And we've said every time we talk about United's shortcomings, they've got no defensive shield, no defensive midfielder really to operate in front of Maguire and whoever that may be. In the same way that City have. And it was embarrassing to see United try and play out from the back. And I get that's part of the way they're trying to play. But it was just, like you said, inviting pressure every time they tried it. So I just winced every time De Gea passed the ball out to Maguire, who then played it wide to Wan-Bissaka, who I think on one occasion almost let another goal slip from that attempted play out of the back. It was an absolute horror show. We just can't do that. But then you don't want to hoof it up front either. So City's intelligence panicked us into situations. It really did. But they do that to every average team in the Premier League, don't they? And that's why they are where they are. So credit to City. Guardiola was almost patronising in his comments towards how United set up. And it's becoming that way for United at the minute, where teams are almost pitying us. And Ralf Hasenhüttl was the same in Southampton's game against us. It was almost like, it's kind of not how you play this game, guys. And it's becoming a bit humiliating now, you know?
Well, the worst part of it was Guardiola, in his post-match, talked about how it was the toughest competition he's ever faced in facing Liverpool in the league. He mentioned how difficult Liverpool were as opponents after the Manchester derby. That's just embarrassing, to be honest. And that would really disappoint me. But it just, the mentality is just so different. Pep's obviously got a winning mentality in that squad, whereas United have got a bit of a stroppy one at the moment. The way they came out for that second half and set up for the second half, you would have thought the score was the other way around. United just sat off them and let them do what they wanted to do. They did not look interested in being engaged in the game at all. And then you read today that apparently Marcus Rashford is now looking at a way out of the club. He's Mr. Man United there. His contract's out next year and he's alarmed by the mentality of the club and his game time. So apparently he's considering whether he's going to bother signing a new deal. And just all of these things keep coming out of the club that cannot help. And really, this was the best time to play City because they scraped that win against Everton. They didn't look that inspiring. I know they played a different 11, but they didn't look particularly good in the FA Cup either. You thought that maybe the pressure that Liverpool were putting on them by winning the day before might get to them a little bit. Yeah. But no, City stepped up massively and showed why they are still the title favourites.
Yeah, I think even Liverpool fans were sort of hanging on, praying for United to get something out of the game just to kind of make the title race that little bit more interesting. But sorry, Liverpool fans, it's not the team you want to hang your hopes on at the minute, United. I don't think getting a result in a game like this was in our locker right now, let's say. I think that's like a kind way of putting it. Yeah. But looking at the Premier League table now, I mean, United have played 28 games and top four is just not going to happen, is it? I mean, you look at Arsenal, which we'll talk about in a moment, 3 games in hand, still above them in the table. It's theirs to lose, really, isn't it, Arsenal's?
Yeah, it is, but they are capable of losing it, I would say. I wouldn't give up hope if I was Man United or Spurs or West Ham even, because I look at the Arsenal fixtures. And they have 3 games in hand, but I think those 3 games in hand are Spurs, Chelsea, Liverpool, as we mentioned last week. And I'm still yet to be convinced by Arsenal in those big games. I think they'll probably beat Spurs, but they'll lose to Liverpool quite comfortably, I think. And they'll probably lose to Chelsea as well. And I think Arsenal United is still to happen. So that could be a huge game. And they've definitely still got West Ham as well. So,
Yeah,
there's a lot to play for with Arsenal's remaining fixtures.
There is, but then there's hanging your hopes on United actually getting results consistently for the rest of the season. I mean, they've not, they only won 2 out of the last 8 now or something like that. So many draws. Obviously, this defeat to City. So the form is not in their favour at all. But Arsenal's result, on the other hand, they beat Watford away 3-2, which, again, is not saying much because Watford have been dreadful lately. But the manner of the win, I thought, was really encouraging for Arsenal fans. And the way their front line interplayed with each other, Martin Odegaard was the best game I've seen him play in Arsenal in Arsenal shirt for a long time, if ever. I thought they played with fun, with joy, with attacking intent. And I think we mentioned before we hit record how there are shortcomings in defence. I thought Ben White was a bit of a liability at times, especially for one of Watford's goals. He should have done a lot better. But overall, I think there's a lot more encouraging signs for Arsenal than there is for, say, United or for Spurs especially, surely.
Definitely. I think some of the young talent that Arsenal have got really shone through in this game. And Martin Odegaard, like you say, it was definitely his best performance I've seen of the season. I thought it was fantastic. And Bukayo Saka just goes from strength to strength. He's such a fantastic footballer and a joy to watch. His attacking intent and the way he drives forward with the ball is just brilliant. And if you remember, when he first came into the Arsenal team, they thought he was a left back. But it's just, he looks something else, doesn't he? I really enjoyed watching him play. And he's playing with a smile on his face. And the atmosphere around Arsenal, it's changed so much. It's annoying for me. And my Twitter feed is either always full of Arsenal fans talking about how their club is the worst run club in the world and they're really hard done by and they deserve success. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they're talking about how they're the best run club in the world and signing Odegaard was a stroke of genius. So I don't know, I can't keep up. But on the bright side, they are into fourth now. They have got difficult games to come, but they're showing some real classy football, which is what Arsenal fans would have wanted for a really long time. And I think the ability in that front line is it's fantastic. They need another number nine, obviously, and they're going to have problems in the summer when Lacazette and Nketiah inevitably move on. But yeah, it's encouraging for them, let's say. But you are right. There was some shortcomings at the back, particularly towards the end of the game. That when they thought they had the game won, they switched off, and that's what let Watford get their second. And Ben White, we'll know he should have done better than that. Gabriel's had a couple of shaky moments over the last few weeks, you could say, as well. But a win's a win at this stage of the season, and they just want to get 3 points on the board at the moment, and they did that. So great, great result for them.
Yeah, I think if they don't get Champions League now, it will be because they've just let it slip, basically. They've got a foundation there that I think at the start of the season was difficult to see happening. And they lost, the first three games in the Premier League. And we were saying, this team's a mediocre, mid-table Premier League team at best. Mm. That seems like a season ago. That doesn't seem like the same season anymore. So that just shows the scale of improvement for Arsenal. And as you say, the front players, the youngsters, they're establishing themselves as really elite players now. And I think that's exciting. I had no idea what the Arteta philosophy was really at any point. And I think we're all questioning whether he had any clue whatsoever of what he was doing. But I think it's a bit clearer now what he's trying to do, you know?
It is. I wonder how much of that is being forced upon him, because the investment in the club is clearly being on pushing the younger players and bringing in younger players that will gain market value. So it's nice to see that he is making that work. And if he is the one that's identifying those targets, or whether it's Edu, they're clearly doing well with it, because their summer signings have all been great. Even Ben White, he looks a bit shaky in moments, but he is still a young centre-back, and he actually is doing really well there. Ramsdale's come on leaps and bounds this year. Tomiyasu's fantastic. They brought in Martin Odegaard on a permanent deal, and we've just been saying how brilliant he looked in the game. So they are making steps in the right direction, definitely. And what's encouraging for Arsenal is, if they can cement European football this year at the very top level, what does that then enable them to kick on to next season? Because they're already building a good foundation of a squad that only has room for growth because it's so young. But now they're also in the Champions League. So when they couldn't attract Vlahovic in January, for example, and he'd rather go to Juventus, well, in the summer, when they identify their next target, not only are they Arsenal in London, have the money, but they've got this crop of young, exciting players and Champions League football to offer. So it's a positive sign for the future for the club, definitely.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's if they can hang on to the players they've got, or whether they're actually got this model of becoming a stepping stone club in some ways, isn't it? Because they've had a reputation for doing that in the past, where players don't win trophies. So I guess they've got to win a trophy in the next couple of seasons with this team of players to make it count. But Champions League football seems like the essential ingredient for them right now. Yeah. It's amazing how different the atmosphere seems at the club without Aubameyang there, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is down to Aubameyang, to be fair, but without him in the starting 11, there is a lot more harmony as well. I mean, he's doing really well in Barcelona. So maybe it was just wrong place for the wrong person. But it is interesting, the change in atmosphere. I'm hearing a lot less talk about how desperate they are for new owners all of a sudden, and how much they need more direction at the top, and Edu's not the right man. All of a sudden, he really is. So it's interesting to see how quickly a few results can change a whole fan base's attitude, to be honest. But fair play to them. If it's working, it's working.
Yeah, I think top four now is getting a bit more clear. I think you say United shouldn't give up on top four, but I can't see any way out of the current rut they're in, to be honest. I can't see them putting a run of games together, or at least matching the pace of Arsenal. They're going to need to better the pace of Arsenal to kind of get there, aren't they? So that looks like a big ask. Tottenham are an absolute freak show at the minute. I can't tell what Tottenham's going to turn up from one game to the next. It's a similar pattern for a few of the teams, to be fair. West Ham seem to be running out of steam every now and again, and losing a big game when it matters. So
That's the problem.
I don't know if they can sustain a challenge still, you know.
That's the problem. No one is consistent. That's why I say if I was United, I wouldn't give up hope. Because, all right, they lost to City pretty embarrassingly, but they were unbeaten in eight before that. And a lot of other teams don't really have the capacity to go on that kind of run. Arsenal have had good runs this season, but then we know that they come up unstuck against the bigger opposition. David Moyes' record against big sides, like when he goes, it is shocking. So even when he's got to play Arsenal, you don't know what that's going to equate to at this moment. Like you say, Tottenham are so unpredictable. So the only reason not to give up in United is because, other than Arsenal, no one else is really putting up a serious challenge for it. So they could all drop off. It's hard to call at this point, but I'm glad. It's exciting. We have a title race, and we didn't think we did. That's drawn itself back, despite Man City looking really good.
Mm.
And we've got a great race for the top four as well. And there's still ambiguity in the relegation picture as well. So it's turned out to be a really good season, to be honest.
Well, you mentioned all of that, but what I'm going to zoom in on next is mid-table mediocrity and celebrating that in all its glory.
Don't say that. I know what you're about to come on to.
I'm about to come on to a glimpse of actual spectacular play to talk about within that nonsense that is the middle of the table, because there's nothing happening there. There's not much movement going on, but Villa pull out an incredible, against the run of form, 4-0 victory against Southampton. Now, this is not a Southampton team that's ripe for a 9-0 dribbling like it has been in previous seasons. They've been in really good form. So I'm keen to know what secret ingredients Steven Gerrard's come up with within the team and the midfield and the front line this time to make that result happen, because it was a great performance from them and some brilliant goals as well. Really good goals to watch.
And a home win. I think it's our first home win in like 3 months or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it could have been 9-0, to be honest. They were absolutely fantastic, Villa, particularly in the first half. The way that they went at Southampton was just, it was brilliant. The things that are working then for Villa now, Watkins and Ings have learned how to play together and clearly have good chemistry. But the reason that they can play together is because they both, individually and together, have a great chemistry with Coutinho. You've brought in a world-class playmaker and put him into the team, and it's making a difference. He's been outstanding. He's played 6 games, got 3 goals, 3 assists. Amazing. And in this game, to be honest, he probably should have scored at least a hat-trick. He was absolutely outstanding. And it lifted the atmosphere of the whole place. Once the first goal went in, you felt like it could have just... And that was early as well. It could have kept going all day. They just... Villa took it like it was a training match after a while. Southampton were completely anonymous. I can think of one very good save that Emi Martinez had to make from Shea Adams. And other than that, Villa got cut through them so easily. When you've got the likes of Callum Chambers playing passes like he's Kaká, it was ridiculous.
They were fantastic. That was a brilliant ball.
Awesome. Do you know what's really funny? When we signed Callum Chambers, I thought that's a very professional signing. I understand it for squad depth. He's versatile, but we won't see much of him. Now, I think Konsa has COVID, so it kind of was a necessity to bring him in. But he's done well. He was a bit shaky against Newcastle when he first came in, but I thought he was brilliant in this game. Like, he was very commanding, played well alongside Mings. And that's the good thing about having a versatile defender who can also play in midfield. He's got passing range. Yeah. And that ball and his vision to see Coutinho's run was outstanding. And that run itself, to make sure you're not straying offside, to hold that pace, it was brilliant. Yeah, it was a wonderful win to watch. It was great.
I've got to say, when I saw that ball from Callum Chambers, I had to do a double take and make sure that was definitely him. Because I thought, number 16 is Chambers, right? Like, I'm seeing the same person here, but it was great. And I think a lot of the players turned up. It was good to see McGinn back. It was good to see Douglas Luiz as well alongside him. The midfield blend seemed better, but they all enabled Coutinho to literally just run the show. Now, Gerrard's kind of waxed lyrical about how this performance was like Coutinho of old and some of the peak Coutinho from the Liverpool days. He was absolutely everywhere, wasn't he? He was threading balls, getting in positions. He was just an energy that I don't know how you could replace, to be honest, if you actually don't keep him next season. He's been incredible since he came to the club.
He'll definitely be staying. There's no doubt about that. And I'm really excited for what he kicks on to. Because the thing with someone like Coutinho is he works so much on his intelligence.
Yeah.
And that chemistry that he's going to develop with his forward line. Now, the reason that him and Douglas Luiz seem to have connected so well is obviously that they know each other. They've played together for Brazil. So they've got that connection. You can see him slowly building that with Watkins and slowly building that with Ings. The longer he is at the club, the better he will get. And that is so exciting because he already looks fantastic. So honestly,
I think he's loving it though, isn't he? That's the thing. He's really enjoying football.
Well, Gerrard said that. Gerrard said that the biggest job with Coutinho was just going to be to get a smile on his face and get him to enjoy his football again. Because he's obviously had a difficult time of it since he left Liverpool. Because the ability is there. And he's 100% right. He's world class. He genuinely is. The signing at the time made my eyes light up. But seeing it in action, he's incredibly good at football. Like, I know that's an obvious thing to say, but it's just, that's the difference in Villa right now. They've got a player who's capable of those moments. His passing range is outstanding. His ability to spot a run and find a teammate, I've not seen anyone be able to do that for Villa at a long time. Because for all the ability, I hate to bring him up every time we talk about Villa, all the ability that Jack Grealish has, it's a very different kind of player. His was more about his movement and taking players on, whereas Coutinho just operates in a way that he brings others into the game a lot more. And I just think I think he's wonderful. I'm so glad that we've got hold of him. And I'm sure we'll talk briefly later about the likes of Brentford bringing in Christian Eriksen. But having that that one world-class playmaker to really help develop the game of everyone else, you'll see everyone thrive off it. And it's no coincidence that Watkins is starting to pick up a bit of form now either.
I was about to say that as well. Watkins, again, one of his best games in a Villa shirt, I thought, but enabled by Coutinho, to be fair. Ings has shown what he can do as a finisher. But I think the quality of Watkins has surprised me. He's a great mover. He gets into great positions. His control with the ball is fantastic. And his finishing is great as well. So he looks like a great all-round forward player. And that's really good for England as well, looking at a player like Watkins flourish like this.
He has to be an England regular in the squad now. Since he's coming to the Premier League, I think only Harry Kane and Jamie Vardy have scored more goals in the Premier League as Englishmen. And obviously Vardy's retired. So he is the perfect player to go into that squad behind Kane. Because you're right, he's a good finisher, but he gets himself into such good positions. And his ability to press and his movement, he's a very intelligent footballer. Really, really is. And he got a lot of stick from Villa fans. I say Villa fans. A very small portion of Villa fans over the last few weeks because he hadn't scored in a few games. But he is quite a streaky player as well. So now I expect him to probably score for the next five games in a row because I think he relies on that confidence and he clearly loves being at Villa. And most of the time he gets a lot of love from the Villa fans. So I hope that persists because he deserves it. He's an absolutely brilliant footballer. I really, really love having Watkins at the club.
I think Watkins and probably Tammy Abraham on form as well. Talking about another English player, look pretty good at the minute, don't they?
Well, Abraham's just hit 20 goals for Roma this season, which is incredible. And he's talking like how much he loves being at that club as well, saying that it was a difficult moment in his career. He didn't know where to go next, but he's clearly really embracing his time in Italy and it's going really well for him. He looks brilliant. And Roma are on a bit more of a incline in their form now as well. And he's massively spearheading that. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah, good options for Gareth Southgate to have. A few headaches that are nice to have up front as well, which we don't normally have as an England team. But going back to Villa quickly, I joked about mid-table mediocrity, but what I think Villa's ambitions are looking like now that run of form has been turned around, hopefully, is a top 10 finish that looked unlikely not so long ago.
Yeah, we need to get that top 10 finish. We're looking at making progress each year. And the best way to do that is to kick on and start getting closer and closer to the European places. Yeah. Which, to be honest, eighth isn't that far off us. I think it's 6 points. I could be wrong. I think it's about 6 points. It's not far. And if we can put a good run together at the end of the season, there's no reason why we can't be in that question. Because we've just talked about how inconsistent other teams are. But you would have said that Brighton are having a good season. They lost the other day. Southampton were on good form. They've obviously lost. People are dropping points quite quickly. And really, that cluster of Wolves, Southampton, Brighton, Villa, Leicester, Palace, they're quite interchangeable at the moment. So the best one of those sides will take the last European place, you'd imagine. And there's no reason Villa can't be pushing for that this year. And if they do, it's probably ahead of schedule. And it will give us another opportunity to kick on again in the summer. All right, we're talking Europa Conference League. It's nothing exciting. But what a statement that would be of just, this is the progress we've made under the new owners. Every single year, we've got better and better and better. So with someone like Coutinho there, you're showing ambition. So let's go for it. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, exciting times and a bit of optimism, which is nice to see a reversal of the bad form that they had recently. So
back-to-back wins at least.
moving on to the rest of the Premier League, a few highlights to talk about really. So Leeds, Leicester, at the King Power Stadium. Leicester won 1-0 actually against the run of play. Leeds setting up quite differently under Jesse Marsh. What did you make of their setup and their performance?
Well, he said openly that he was going to move to zonal instead of man marking. And they did look a lot more efficient at the back. They were undone by a moment of pure quality by Harvey Barnes, who we know is capable of that. I think he's a very, very underrated footballer and another one that really should be knocking on the door for England.
Yeah.
But again, the only problem for Leeds is without Bamford, they do just look a bit toothless. Obviously, they've had a couple of other players step up with some goals this season. Obviously, Harrison got that hat-trick the other week and Rafinha's a great footballer. Rodrigo's come in and done okay, but they really, really miss Bamford. You can see that. And had they had that clinical finisher in this game, maybe things would have been slightly different. But
definitely
positive signs for Leeds. Typically, once again, a club gets a brand new manager just before they play Villa, and they always seem to have some sort of bounce when they come to us. But we'll see how they get on with against us in their next game. Jesse March is such an interesting appointment, though, I've got to say. Yeah. I really don't know what to make of it. He's another one who, if you were in a relegation battle, would I have turned to Jesse March? I'm not sure. Because what kind of manager is he in this sort of capacity, in this level? He's obviously done really well at Salzburg, and he did well in New York as well.
Yeah.
But it didn't really work for him at Leipzig. To be fair to him, it was an odd time to come into Leipzig. Because he'd lost Sabitzer, he'd lost Upamecano. He was obviously stepping into a very big manager's shoes there, and it just didn't really blend. But if you look at the likes of Haaland and Minamino and some of the players that he helped bring through at Salzburg, maybe he's a good step in the right direction for Leeds, who are continuing to develop good players. By all accounts, he's someone that Leeds have identified for quite a while, because Bielsa's always had very short contracts. So I understand them making the move, but it's really going to be interesting having him in for a relegation battle when he's not really ever been familiar with that sort of task.
No, I think there's still a very real chance that they could go down as well. They look still deeply rooted in trouble. And if Burnley can get their game in hand won, I'm pretty sure they sink into the bottom three. I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
It depends on how Everton get on in their games in hand, because I think they're in 17th, aren't they? I mean, the thing is, I say that about Leeds. I admire it. I would much rather see Leeds go for a manager that they think has got the right tactical approach for them long term than panic and bring in Sam Allardyce or someone like that. That would have been ridiculous. So I think the Leeds fans will be happy that at least it's followed their club's direction. And March is... I listened to an interview with Jesse March a little while ago on another podcast, actually, and his footballing brain is extensive, and his philosophy is quite strong. Now, he's obviously getting a lot of coverage in the British press as being the real life Ted Lasso, which is so far from the truth. He's just American. That's the only thing about him. And I think he'll have a job on his hands to prove that. But it'll be interesting to see what he can do at this level.
I'd just be interested to see if Leeds do go down, whether he'd stick around for a season in the Championship, like Bielsa started. If so, then great. It's an interesting appointment. And you can see already after one game, although he's not had much time to sort of spend with the players, that there was a philosophy change there, which was interesting. So, interesting times for Leeds, and probably more, I say certainty, but more kind of clarity now than when they were struggling under Bielsa, which is something for them at least. Any other games take your eye over the weekend?
Probably Brentford Norwich is another one worth mentioning, because obviously Brentford looked like they were sinking them fast. So this was a game that they really had to pick up 3 points in. Norwich, kind of the league's whipping boys. So if you're not beating Norwich, then you are going to find yourselves in a bit of trouble at this sort of stage in the season. But Ivan Toney obviously missed a fairly sizable portion of the year so far in 2022. And to come back and get a hat-trick, whether two of them were penalties or not, that's fantastic. He's so clinical from the spot as well. His penalty record is absolutely outrageous, to be honest. And he won the second penalty he won very well. And the other thing about that performance was Christian Eriksen obviously played his first full 90 minutes and looked really threatening. It was a creative force, something that they needed. He delivered well from set pieces. They got their first goal from that corner that he put in very well. So that could be a real sign of encouragement for Brentford, as long as they don't just let it be a win against Norwich. They have to now build on that. They have to get, I think, two or three more wins between now and the end of the season, they'll be safe. Maybe only two, to be honest, because there's so many teams below them. But that's the sort of stakes we're playing with now. Yeah. Burnley are the ones that you would fear, even though they lost quite heavily at the weekend. They're the ones that you can imagine getting out of the relegation zone. I think Watford and Norwich are probably down, so you've got to rely on them not catching you. But great for Brentford to get a win.
Yeah, a funny moment of the weekend actually was when Christian Eriksen was brought down by Brandon Williams. Did you see that? In a bit of anger. And then Williams realised who it was and was almost apologetic and gave him a hug. That was quite a nice
touch. Thought, this is very bad PR for me. I'll never play for Man United if people hate me like this.
But yeah, good result for Brentford. I want to sort of mention just Chelsea briefly, because they obviously beat Burnley quite heavily 4-0. Reece James back into the team looked really good, really effective. Kai Havertz seems to find some form again. And we were touting him to be a really big player this season, but he's left it late. He looks decent. I do wonder whether they miss having Tammy Abraham, though, whether they regret having him instead of Lukaku, for example.
I think that a little bit as well, because I think Tammy Abraham would really suit the system that Chelsea play as well, probably more than Lukaku necessarily does. Lukaku, we saw, I mean, it's been said a thousand times, but we saw Lukaku's best football at Inter when he played with someone like Lautaro Martinez, and they're not playing him like that at Chelsea. And Timo Werner is not the same sort of partner as Martinez was. Abraham would suit the system really well. I thought at the time that it was bizarre to let him go, because I think he's a fantastic forward, but look, Chelsea will finish third this season. There's no doubt about it. They will finish third. Not second, not fourth, but third.
It's
up to them how they kick on next season. But there's so much uncertainty at the club. Obviously, Dave and I talked quite heavily about the influence on the Russian invasion of Ukraine last week. And since then, a lot of information has come out. And obviously, it's very public now that Abramovich is looking to sell the club. Who knows what that will do for Chelsea in the long run, and how it will affect football as a whole in this country, whether they might fall off a little bit. But yeah, I don't know with Chelsea. A good win. But again, you have to win those games. If you're not beating Burnley as a club like Chelsea, then that's worrying at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd play devil's advocate with the Tammy Abraham situation, to be fair.
I agree with you, though. I
think Frank Lampard was onto something there by persisting with him. I definitely think he's as a player of great ability, and Lukaku is just not a good fit. It looks that way every game, and it becomes clearer. Whatever his future is would be interesting as well.
Oh, I feel so bad for Lukaku and his time in England. I think he's so underrated in this country, because I think he's an absolutely brilliant forward. But again, it's just one of those moves where a lot of the moves over the summer, you look at and think, if you'd done that to different clubs, if we just swapped all of you around slightly, Grealish to Man City, maybe. You look at Ronaldo to United. Was that the right player they needed? Lukaku to Chelsea. If Lukaku had gone to Man City, we probably would have seen more of him this season.
Probably.
If Grealish had gone to Man United, that probably would have worked better as well. I don't know. I just feel like we're still waiting for a lot of players to settle in and to see the best of some outstanding footballers. But yeah, at least Tammy Abraham made the right move, like we said.
So elsewhere in the Premier League, we've missed Wolves 0 Palace 2. It's a good win for Palace against a decent Wolves side. Liverpool carried on winning, which is what they need to do really against this City team. They beat West Ham 1-0. Not a great performance from them, to be fair. It's quite lethargic, I thought, but they got the win nonetheless.
Yeah, they had to defend quite a lot towards the back end of the game, and they did that well. West Ham just could not finish their chances. One player that did perform very, very well, and I've been so impressed by him since he's been over, is Luis Diaz. He looks fantastic. When he picks up the ball, you just feel like he's gonna move at least 40 yards up the pitch. And he's very effective at doing that. He's got lightning pace. He's very direct. I thought he was the real bright spark for Liverpool. But West Ham will be disappointed that they didn't get a point from the game and the way that they finished it in particular. But it took them a while to grow into it. And Jarrod Bowen obviously went off injured, which will be a worry for them. We'll see how
that
goes.
We said that, didn't we? We said Bowen and Rice, if any one of them's out of the picture for a period of time, then they're going to struggle. So yeah, at this stage of the season, because you're really willing for someone like West Ham to make a push for the top four, and just kind of ruins that sense of urgency and competition, doesn't it, for the top four, if that's the case. It's a shame.
Yeah, hopefully they'll both be back quite soon. I've not seen much coverage of what it was, but one thing it was quite nice to see was Mark Noble. I thought it was obviously you should forget that he's finishing at the end of the season and what a servant he's been to West Ham, but if he can help them kick on in the Europa League or even get top four, what a way to sign off that would be. So yeah, we'll see what happens with West Ham with the rest of the season, but they really need to address the depth of that squad in the summer if they do want to kick on.
Yeah, I think you'd like to think they'd take advantage of this kind of momentum of the board and kind of go, do you know what, we do need to invest. We've got no depth in the squad. Now's the time to capitalise on it. I hope they do, because they could be a real challenger for top four going forward, couldn't they? So
definitely,
that would be amazing. I will leave it there, Miles. We've talked through the Premier League in some depth. It's been a great weekend of football, actually. I think this coming week, we've got Champions League again that's back, as far as I'm aware. And obviously some more Premier League games at the weekend. So thank you for your time, mate. Really appreciate it again, as always. Hopefully I have Dave back with us next time around. But thank you.
He didn't want this one, did he?
He didn't give me an official reason why he couldn't join. But like I say, he's our Roy Keane, so it's probably best that he didn't. But on that note, thank you, mate. Appreciate your time. And I'll speak to you soon. Cheers.
Nice one.